Let's get together, talk about the movies that we saw this week. We'll have discussions, talk film news, we'll laugh a lot and act like geeks. Sometimes we'll have a guest or two, sometimes it's just the two of us. Let's crack some jokes and tell some folks to come along and hang with us!
Mike and Mike go to the movies. Mike and Mike go to the movies.
Yeah!
You have chosen wisely.
You cannot change the podcast. However, you can rise to meet it if you so choose. Unless you want to change it to Mike and Mike Go to the Movies, then that's perfectly reasonable. I'm Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is a man who knows that 86.5% human is still human.
Mike DiCriccio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good. Sometimes I feel about 86.5% human when I'm just like walking through Times Square to get to work, and you're just like, fucking kill me now, you know?
Sure, sure. I get that.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Usual kind of stuff happening here. I mean, we both had kind of like crazy weekends.
Yeah.
Which we don't have to go into that on the podcast necessarily.
So stuff was leaking, and then we called a plumber, and the plumber was coming over, and then my next door neighbor's tree fell and took down the power lines. So we had to hold the flashlights for the plumber because there was no toilet, no lights.
Yep.
It's a bad rough Saturday here.
It's a bad
my
combo.
Yeah. So that was my weekend.
Yeah, and then mine involved, you know, car accidents and urgent care visits and, you know, all that good stuff. So yeah, just fun times all around, really.
Just, you know, and then you got to come home and kick back and watch Nemesis.
I had actually already watched Nemesis earlier in the week before I had done that. So, in fact, I came home and sat and stared at the wall because nothing could ever come close.
That's right.
To matching the glory that that was Albert Pyun's Nemesis from 1992. Yes, we are doing it. Mike Makes Mike Watch this week, Mike.
Yes, very exciting times. And I guess I have to apologize to the listeners out there. Well, one day I'll pick Popstar, I guess. A certain producer named Colin texted me and was like, when are you going to pick this goddamn movie? And I don't know why I haven't picked it yet, but it's now it might now just be a thing that I never pick Popstar.
Because it's making Colin so mad. Yes, I think you have to keep not picking Popstar. until we eventually like lead up to like a big Popstar episode, like, you know, after 5 years of doing this bit,
yeah,
you'll finally watch Popstar.
We'll have Andy Samberg on the show. It'll be great.
Yes. Yeah. I think he'll do it. Right.
He probably would. What else has he got going?
Hey, Brooklyn Nine-Nine's over. He's got plenty of free time on his
hands. He's got free time. He's bumming it on podcasts. Come
right.
on.
Exactly. So yeah, we're doing a Mike Makes Mike Watch. I chose a movie for Mike to watch. He chose one for me to watch. And we're going to get into that in just a little bit. First, got to tell you that all the theme songs that you're going to hear this episode were created by Kyle Cullen, who you can reach for your own theme songs at kylespodcastthemes@gmail.com. Our logo was designed by Mac V, whose art you can find at Fearless Guard on Twitter. And if you ever want to contact us and respond to something we did in the show, you can tweet at us at Mike and Mike Pod. But also, we should mention, you know, top of the show, why not, that we've got merch available now.
That's right, baby.
Yes. Thanks to Mike Deep for setting this up. But Mike and Mike Pods have a Redbubble account.
Yeah.
So you can get the Mike and Mike logo or the Complete Works Michelle Yeoh logo on all kinds of different stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah. You want a bath mat? You want a clock? You want a spiral notebook? I forget what else.
Basically, one of them.
We checked everything. Yes. Put it on all the stuff. So if you want to rep some of our logos, our great Michelle Yeoh Pod poster, you can get like an actual poster of that artwork from Mac, which is dope as hell. It's mikeandmikepods.redbubble.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It makes for a great Christmas gift, Mike and Mike Pod merch. You know, give it to the loved one in your life who probably doesn't listen to the podcast.
That's right. Confuse a lot of girlfriends. And just get them some random podcast merch.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. It's the gift that keeps on giving, as we like to say.
Correct.
Yeah, so it is a Mike Makes Mike Watch today. And today, Mike, you're making me watch Albert Pyun's Nemesis from 1992, a movie that you saw at some kind of like Alamo Drafthouse marathon a few years back.
Yes.
And we're recently thinking about because Albert Pyun passed away.
Yeah, I found, I found the tweets, you know, from when I was at the thing, and I found the actual title of what that marathon was.
Okay.
And I will tell you in a second. It was in 2019, and it was the Trash Action Spectacular, a mystery marathon. And yeah, it was all 90s action, trash action movies.
Nice.
Which is where I saw Trespass for the first time. Instant
right.
favorite. Just immediate absorption into the Mike D canon.
Sure, yes. And also a movie you made me watch for Mike Makes Mike Watch.
I have, yeah. Then it was Bulletproof with Gary Busey, which I remember being just insane, killing Nicaraguans, one of those kind of like 90s
sure.
Communists are bad movies. Live Wire, an HBO movie with Pierce Brosnan, where he plays a FBI bomb diffuser guy.
I remember you telling me about that. Yeah.
Sexy as fuck. I gotta try to find that. If it's available anywhere.
Is and Complete then, Work Season 4 gonna be Pierce Brosnan?
I'm in, baby. Lawnmower Man, let's go.
Yes. Oh, no, we can't. Tomorrow Never Dies is part of the Michelle Yeoh series.
No, we're gonna delete that rule. I demand a fan write a protest vote for...
For a Brosnan season.
Pierce Brosnan. And then it was Nemesis was movie number 3.
Okay.
So really, really great rising all the way to the peak in number 3. And then it kind of dipped down a little bit towards the last two movies. But yeah, that's where I saw it for the first time.
Nice. Okay. So yeah, you made me watch that this week. And then I made you watch a movie that I saw back in 2018. Actually, this is one of the first movies that I saw at the Roxy Theater, the Indie Theater near my house in Missoula, Montana. Because back then, when I moved here, they were doing a Hayao Miyazaki series. And at the time, I had not seen any Hayao Miyazaki movies, like an idiot.
Yeah.
And so I ended up watching a bunch of those for the first time at the Roxy during that series. The very first movie I ever saw at the Roxy was Kiki's Delivery Service. And wow. So after that, I mean, I ended up seeing Spirited Away. I saw Ponyo. I saw Porco Rosso, I believe, during that series. And I saw the movie that I'm making you watch today, which is my favorite Miyazaki, Princess Mononoke.
Oh, interesting. I don't think I realized you had such a personal history with this movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is a very early Roxy Mike favorite, you know, whatever you want to call it. It's great. I was a big fan of this movie and was really blown away when I saw this in the theater, which I watched the English dub back then. Did you watch this in English or Japanese?
I did watch it in English only because that's the only available version on HBO Max.
Oh,
so
fair.
It's just like easy to find.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they have a whole like Miyazaki or Studio Ghibli channel or whatever
I know they have the Ghibli channel. I didn't know they only had the English versions though.
Yeah, there is no other audio options because I was going to switch it. I was like, oh, let me put it on the Japanese dub.
Yeah.
And nope, it's only the English version.
Fair enough. The English version is good, though. Like, it's,
yeah,
there's no issues with it as far as I'm concerned. I actually just watched Howl's Moving Castle for the first time, which was terrific. Also at the Roxy. I've actually only ever seen, that's not true. I was about to say I've only ever seen Miyazaki movies at the Roxy, but I did watch My Neighbor Totoro at home at one point. So I could have kept the streak going. But I did watch Howl's Moving Castle for the first time this past, like 2 weeks ago at the Roxy. And that was the English dub. And it's very good. I think the English Miyazaki dubs are all actually very good. I think, you know, it's kind of like a pick your poison. Like, oh, either one, you're good. Like Japanese or English, it's fine.
Yeah.
For most of these movies, at least. Howl's Moving Castle has Billy Crystal as a talking fire, by the way. So
nice.
It's got that going for it.
I was, to be honest, kind of distracted, though, by Billy Bob Thornton in Princess Mononoke.
I forgot he was in that. Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, pretty great. Pretty star-studded, you know, gets a lot of people in all of the English dubs of those movies.
Sure.
So that's cool.
Yeah, definitely. So we got Nemesis, we got Princess Mononoke. We're going into a Mike Makes Mike watch. Mike, which one would you like to talk about first?
I think Mononoke. Because I think if I was going to double feature these, I would want to end with the insane action of Nemesis.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. All right, so let's get into it. It's time to talk Princess Mononoke.
In a time when gods walk the earth, an epic battle rages between the encroaching civilization of man and the gods of the forest.
When the forest has been cleared and the wolves wiped out, this place will be the richest land in the world.
Now, the fate of the world rests on the courage of one fearless princess.
I'm not afraid to die, and I would do anything to get the humans out of here.
And one brave warrior.
You fight like a demon, boy. Like something possessed.
What exactly are you here for?
To see with eyes unclouded by hate.
Now watch closely, everyone. I'm going to show you how to kill a god. Fire!
I hope they choose right. Mike's watching Mike's movie. Picked for him specially. Whoa.
All right, right, so Princess Mononoke is a movie from 1997, directed by Hayao Miyazaki. It's a movie, like I said, that I saw when I first moved to Missoula as part of the Roxy's Miyazaki series. The English dub stars people like Minnie Driver, Billy Crudup, Tara Strong, John DiMaggio, like you mentioned, Billy Bob Thornton, Gillian Anderson, Keith David is in this version, and Jada Pinkett Smith also popping up in Princess Mononoke, the English version. So, Mike, like I said, I mean, I think this movie has been in the Mike Makes Mike Watch rotation for a while.
Has it?
I think I've brought it at least one other time. It's been like a contender, you know, one of those things where I bring up three movies and you select one, and obviously you didn't choose Princess Mononoke in the past, but it's been in the contention for a while because it is my favorite Miyazaki and because I think it's great. So, what are your overall thoughts on Princess Mononoke?
I think this movie is like an incredible artistic achievement. It's amazing. The voice performance is very good. Overall, like you know, we're splitting hairs on like a pretty great movie, but it did feel a little bit long.
Yeah, it's a little long.
It's 2 hours and I think 15 minutes or something like that, which isn't anything crazy. But I watched it like on a Sunday afternoon and I was just kind of like, man, it might be nap time. You know, like I was kind of just in that vibe. And I was thinking a lot about like the difference between watching stuff like this at home versus your experience of watching in a theater. Because I could tell while I was watching it, I was like, man, if I was like locked in a theater with a crowd and I couldn't be on Twitter also, you know, like I would be like in. I'd be like in the zone. This movie would be reaching me in ways that it's not reaching me right now. Whether it's just the, you know, whatever it is, the Sunday sleepies kind of thing going on. So that said, I was a little like I felt maybe it drags a little bit in the middle, but overall it's impressive and beautiful, and it's got the Miyazaki the magic. It's got the thing where you're like, could be a horse. What if it's a giant red elk instead? And you're just like, ah, this is the coolest fucking thing ever. You know, just the slight little twist on stuff to make it just the tiniest bit fantastical to just like spark your imagination and the happiness that brings. And everything about it and the little details that are always in it. There's like one thing that just like made me so happy. And it's just this little detail where I think Iron Town is like being attacked or whatever. And they're passing out swords. And this person that's like clearly never really held a sword before tries to walk through a doorway and the sword gets stuck on the frame. And it's just like in the side of the frame, it's not related to the people talking.
Yeah.
And you're just like the inclusion of that. To just like, that tells me everything about that character and the world of this town in this little visual throwaway thing on the side of the frame. Just like, cinema, like amazing, incredible. And it's just full of shit like that all the way throughout. And I think now I was thinking about it, it's really, I think this might be the second Miyazaki movie that I've seen. I feel like it's like when I was watching it, I was like, wait, this might be a much bigger gap in my knowledge than I think, just because of like cultural osmosis. So much of his stuff is so iconic that you're like, oh, for sure, I've seen that. And then you're like, wait, I think that was like a Twitter post. I don't think I've actually seen this movie.
I've seen several GIFs from this, but I have not seen the movie.
Yeah, exactly. So I, you know, just put Miyazaki and we can use it however many times on the list of Mike Makes Mike Watch. Just however many movies he's got, we'll count that.
Fair enough.
As one of the options.
So you think you've only seen one other Miyazaki movie?
I think it's Totoro is the only other one I've seen.
Really? Okay. So you've never seen Spirited Away?
No.
Okay. You've never seen Howl's Moving Castle?
No, yeah.
Porco Rosso.
I know about Porco Rosso with the like anti-fascist pigs or whatever. So
I think you would love Porco Rosso.
That's probably, put that at the top.
Yeah, it rules. It's Michael Keaton, I mean the English dub, Michael Keaton plays Porco Rosso, who is like an Italian anti-fascist pilot or who is just like is turned into a pig for reasons that are relatively unexplained, I think. And it's awesome. It's great.
Yeah. But Mononoke, the thing I was watching with a couple of friends and I was like, I was telling them like, oh, you know, Mike Makes Mike Watch. Yeah, I think we're sort of accidentally doing like a action in loose quotes, double feature thing. And they were like, yeah, this isn't like a, like not actiony movie. And then people's arms are getting shot off with arrows. Like as we were talking about that, and I was like, holy shit. Okay. So yeah, just the unexpected violence, and gore, I guess maybe I'd say gore. Sure. So yeah. But I don't know. Just that kind of comes out of nowhere, especially with this whole like idyllic, not peaceful up to that point. Cause there has been this like demon boar thing that has like attacked the town and it's caused lots of problems. But then Ashitara, I think is the main character's name, comes across, you know, these like rogue samurai attacking this village, and he intervenes as he's riding by on his giant elk or yak, Yakul. And yeah, accidentally shoots people's arms off because he's so strong now.
Right.
And just shooting people's heads off and people getting just blown away by his arrows and stuff. And you're like, holy shit, what is going on? I wasn't expecting like full dismemberment in this movie. So yeah, that'll be our loose connection to Nemesis.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, it's been a few years since I've watched Mononoke. And so I've wanted to go back and rewatch for a while and did not get the chance before this podcast. But I think this movie is so interesting and so like, much more thematically complex than I think I expected when I first saw it. Because again,
yeah.
When I first saw it, I had just seen Kiki's Delivery Service and that was it. And I had just watched that like 2 weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. Kiki's Delivery Service is a delight. It's great, but the movie is just like a little girl is a witch and she gets tired from working all the time. And
relatable.
Yeah, honestly, very much. And the movie is like literally just about her like working nonstop, like to keep like, you know, her like just to have a house over her head and that kind of thing. On the end of every day, she just like plops down on her bed and like sleeps. And it's terrific. It's really good. She's friends with an artist. It's great. He has a talking cat.
Put it on the list.
We're watching Tiki's Delivery Service right now.
I'm in.
Yeah, no. And Mononoke, watching that right after Kiki was like, holy shit. Like, when I watched Kiki, I was like, oh, I get this. This is kind of fun. This is cute. That was my first Miyazaki. And then watching this, I was like, okay, I get it now. Like, I kind of get why everybody is so obsessed with Hayao Miyazaki. And then very shortly after that, I saw Spirited Away and I saw Ponyo and all that other stuff. Ponyo, I'm not as crazy about, but Spirited Away is really great. Yeah, no, this movie is really cool. And I think much darker than I expected it to be when I first watched it.
Yeah.
Goes to some really intense places. Like, it's very much like a big epic action story that has a lot to say about environmentalism and society and everything like that.
Yeah, industrialization and like colonization and all that stuff and like genocide and like that Ashitara is like from this forbidden clan that like escaped or supposed to have been wiped out 500 years ago and he can't tell anybody that this is where he's from because then they'll know that these people are still alive here and all this craziness and about, I don't remember the main villain's name, but the woman that runs Irontown, like has developed gunpowder and smelting and all this stuff. And
yeah,
just about them like strip mining the forest and they want to kill the forest god because the forest creatures keep rebuilding the forest, but they need the forest gone. So they're like, let's just kill nature basically.
Right.
Until it culminates in this big goop kaiju thing at the end, which is crazy. Yeah. And you're like, oh, this is anime, you know? And I know we've talked about your journey into becoming anime guy, Mike Smith.
And again, that's maybe a little bit of an overstatement, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe. But I can see, you know, this being like one of the first ones that you've seen, you know, you kind of realize like, oh, wait, it's just a medium for storytelling. Of course, it can be about very adult and serious things packaged in this kind of cute, you know, animation or whatever. But, you know, like compare this in Your Name to some other like, goofy anime show or whatever.
Right.
You're like, holy shit, these things can make you cry and like to be emotionally devastating and amazing and have very serious tones and themes and stuff at the same time.
Yeah, it is weird that, again, I'm not the biggest anime person. And it's weird that I've now made you watch two anime movies.
Yeah, exactly.
From like Mix Mike Watch with this in Your Name. And I don't think you've made me watch any, I'm pretty sure.
I don't think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's never come up. And like in the past, I would say like you're definitely much more of an anime guy than I am.
Yeah.
And you probably still are.
Yes, I did talk about Chainsaw Man last week.
That's very much true. But Miyazaki, I think, is a lot of people's like kind of gateway to anime. It's a good entry point for a lot of people.
Yeah.
For his films, and I think Princess Mononoke especially is one that like really shows you, yeah, how much it can elevate the storytelling that it's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know the whole like, you know, theatrical anime versus like a TV show anime, because I generally have watched like TV shows, and I don't know why I haven't really watched many movies. And you've only mostly watched movies and haven't watched many TV shows.
That's because a lot of those shows are like 15 seasons long.
Correct.
Hundreds of episodes that I cannot get through.
Yeah. I don't blame you. I've avoided all of those things for the most part. I try to watch like the more limited ones or ones that are done already.
Yeah,
which is very nice. But yeah, I guess I'll just put it on my New Year's resolution to watch more theatrical anime and or Miyazaki movies.
Yeah, there you go. That said, I have been recently rewatching Dragon Ball. Have I talked about this in the podcast yet?
Oh, I don't think so on the podcast. No.
Okay. Yeah, I've been rewatching Dragon Ball because I mean, I've never been a big anime guy, but I loved Dragon Ball as a kid.
Who didn't?
Yeah, I mean, it fucking ruled. Specifically Dragon Ball Z. I was really into Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
because that show is incredible. And so I've watched a lot of Dragon Ball Z. I've watched a lot of Dragon Ball. Had not watched any of those shows, you know, since I was maybe 15. You know, like I definitely bought a couple of seasons of Dragon Ball Z on DVD after Dragon Ball Evolution came out, the live action movie.
The movie? Oh, my God.
Because the movie was so bad that I went to Walmart right afterwards, because it was right across the street from the movie theater, found Dragon Ball Z on DVD, and I was like, I have to buy this to make sure that this is still good. Like, I have to, like,
I have to prove to myself
that this is good. And yeah, Dragon Ball Z fucking ruled. It was great. And so I have the first couple seasons on DVD, but I've been watching the English dub of the original Dragon Ball on Funimation streaming service. They just have it all there. They have that, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super. And so it's been a good, just like kind of comfort show rewatch kind of thing, where I can pop on like 3 or 4 episodes of Dragon Ball after like having a couple of beers and like hang out at the house. It's great.
Nice.
So very much enjoying my Dragon Ball rewatch. I will keep people updated on it. Because it's like my Sopranos watch, but with Dragon Ball.
What happened with the X-Files watch? Is that...
I got 3 episodes in and it hasn't really...
Didn't hook you. Okay.
Didn't hook me yet. I mean, I, you know, maybe I'll keep it going if I can, but I'm disappointed in myself more than anything. You know,
I think Dragon Ball is a more worthy recurring check-in for the podcast.
You think so?
I think so. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. So right now I just finished the, I believe the General Blue Saga, I want to say his name was.
Sure.
But we're deep in the Red Ribbon Army now, people. It is. It's pretty intense. Goku just reunited with Bulma. They are off to find the Dragon Balls, and shenanigans presumably will ensue.
Good, good, good. I'm glad.
But anyway, yeah, Princess Mononoke. Any other thoughts about this movie, Mike, before we start talking about our other movie today?
I think that it's just, you know, you always hear and see and think about like the like Miyazaki Studio Ghibli movie like artistry, I guess.
Yeah.
But then when you really like watch the movies, you're just like, God damn. Like,
yeah.
Just, and then just like the weird Pixarization of like American cinema, American animation, and like how everybody's eyes and faces all sort of look the same now, and they all kind of look like the same type of character build.
Right.
And then just how diverse and weird and interesting and unique every character looks in this movie. You're just like, and it's all hand-drawn, which it's crazy. So yeah, just kind of a deep appreciation for that style of animation, which has basically gone away in at least American animation. So yeah, Miyazaki.
Yeah, you know? Good stuff.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, definitely. I encourage you to continue on your Miyazaki journey, Mike. I don't want to do that for every Mike Makes Mike watch because that might get repetitive. But like on your own, watch some Miyazaki stuff. Because yeah, a lot of it's incredible. It's really good.
Yeah. And I really have no excuse that there's just like a section on HBO Max that's just all of those movies.
There's like a big arrow pointing to Hayao Miyazaki movies.
Yeah. Like, Mike, look here. I'm like, I don't know. Where's List of Spookies? You know?
Right. Nowhere now. It's been canceled. Did you see that?
I did not know that. No.
Oh, no. Sorry to break that news to you.
That's okay.
List of Spookies, I believe, has been canceled after 2 seasons.
Devastating. At least we got 2.
At least you got 2. Exactly. All right. So that's Princess Mononoke. And now let's move into the other movie that Mike made me watch this week, and that is Nemesis.
Alex Rain is a human being. His life is more dangerous with each sunrise.
Alex Rain will be destroyed somehow, some way.
He should die for what he's done.
Get him!
In a future false world, he stands for truth.
He's a cop, all right.
In a violent world, violence is his life. He knows he must face the human condition alone.
It takes more than flesh and blood to be human, Alex.
I can't feel anything anymore.
Maybe you should take the time to find out what you care about, Alex.
You're not really human anymore, are you?
He knows the answer, but he doesn't know the question.
I think he accepted the story. By the time he learns the truth, it'll be too late.
All right, that was from the trailer for Nemesis from 1992, directed by Albert Pune, starring Olivier Gruner in the lead role. Grunier? Grunois? I'm not entirely sure.
I don't know.
But he's the main character. Also, just kind of mention that Thomas Jane and Jackie Earle Haley pop up in like kind of early roles in this one.
What a weird fucking movie.
So yeah, Nemesis. I had not really heard much about this movie. I guess I had heard you talk about it when you talked about that marathon a few years back.
Yeah,
it had kind of left my mind. I wasn't really thinking about it much. And then in recent months, I've been seeing on Twitter that director Albert Pune, who was well known for directing a lot of video, like direct-to-video kind of movies, like, you know, kind of weird action movies, but really elevated them. I was known for like kind of taking that format and like turning in some like really weird, crazy stuff that often had kind of heavy themes. And Nemesis was just one of those movies. He also did a movie called Mean Guns, was the name of the movie, which I've been seeing a lot of love for. He also did Cyborg with Jean-Claude Van Damme. He did the 1990 Captain America movie. The Sword and the Sorcerer is also a big Albert Pune movie. But Nemesis actually launched a series. There's like 5 Nemesis movies.
What? I don't think I knew that.
Oh, really?
Incredible.
Yeah, there's 5 Nemesis movies. Albert Pune directed the first 4 of them and produced the 5th one. From what I can tell, the other ones are not as well liked as the original Nemesis.
Okay.
But they take some wild swings. Like Nemesis 2 takes place 73 years after the original movie. Humans have lost the cyborg wars and they are now slaves to the cyborg masters.
Beautiful.
So yeah, you got wild stuff like that. Also, apparently Chad Stahelski is in Nemesis 2, co-director of John Wick and or director of the John Wick movies.
I saw somebody tweet, I don't know the name of the movie, but Albert Pune made a movie with Sweehark of Complete Works season 3 fame.
Yes, he's of course in Yes Madam and directed of course many great Hong Kong movies. I believe the Once Upon a Time in China movies are Sweehark movies, right?
Squaring off against Kris Kristofferson with stunts by Chad Stahelski.
That
so, like,
sounds awesome, and I'm frantically looking through his filmography right now to figure out what movie.
I don't know what the name of the movie is, but that's our next Mike Banks Mike Watch, whatever it is.
Whatever it is, doesn't matter. So he's made a lot of movies in that vein, let's say. Is it Hong Kong 97?
I don't know. That was just
It's not. But that just seemed like a title that, like, oh, that could be it. No. Hong Kong 97 stars Robert Patrick and Ming-Na Wen.
I'm in.
Yeah, sounds good. But anyway, yeah. So a lot of movies in that vein where it's like a couple of like maybe notable names, like kind of big names and action films and stuff. And Albert Pune would direct these movies in a way that elevated them from your typical direct-to-video fare around this time. And often has been like kind of compared to like the 90s version of like Ed Wood or something like that, right?
Right.
And so Nemesis I had not seen, obviously, because you were making me watch it. You had seen in this marathon and you rewatched it before this podcast.
Yes, I did. So I found the movie. It's called Knights with a K.
Okay.
And Lance Henriksen's also in it.
Nice. Sounds great.
Beautiful. I'm in. Yes. Yeah. So I saw this movie at the marathon and I remember liking it, but also I think it was, like I said, it was movie 3 or 4 of that marathon. And as you know, that's kind of
that's the sleep movie.
So I was definitely like fading in and out and, you know, Olivier Gunner, whatever the main guy, is maybe not like the strongest lead. So I remember not super being into it.
Maybe not is definitely a choice.
I wanted to hear your thoughts before I said that. doing a lot of lifting in that sentence. So I was maybe not super into it, but I remember like being like, I think this is really cool. And then thinking, of course, about the Matrix connection, which I'm sure we'll talk about, or other movies that it could influence or is ripping off. And then I was like, I saw all this stuff when after Albert Pune died, and I was like, I think this has the potential to actually be like a secret great movie that we just didn't know about. And also now we've done all this groundwork personally with us for Complete Works season 3, where I've now found myself just being super interested in a lot of these movies that I would have written off had we not just watched 15 of those movies in a row, and we'll watch 50 more. That I was like, yeah, it's time for Nemesis, basically.
Yeah, and I enjoyed Nemesis. That was fun. I had a good time.
Okay, that's enough.
Yeah, so Nemesis is streaming on Peacock, by the way, if anybody wants to check it out. And, you know, the movie itself, like on a basic plot level, I will say a lot of it doesn't make too much sense. But an action scene breaks out every 5 minutes.
Yep.
And they're typically pretty awesome. And just like the premise of the movie is fun enough where you're like, I'm just kind of with it. Like, I'm kind of with the movie no matter where it goes at this point. The movie takes place in the distant future of 2027.
Oh, I mean, but it still feels we're close. I think this is possible at any minute.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're only 5 years away, Mike, from 2027 in real life. You know, which, you know, at the time, 92, it seems so far away. 35 years, all that stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah, and in this future, illegal androids or cyborgs have become commonplace, and criminals enhance themselves with these cybernetic components, making them more than human. And you have this main guy, Olivier Gruner, Alex, who is a disillusioned assassin slash bounty hunter for the LAPD, who kind of goes off on like one last mission, basically to take out a cyborg terrorist.
Yeah, yeah, he's like basically killed. He's RoboCopped basically in the beginning of the movie.
Yes,
where he dies and they bring him back because he's so good at his job that they can't let him leave.
Yes, and he's already part cyborg in that opening scene too. He's 86.5% human.
Yeah. So when he comes back, he's, you know, barely human anymore, and he goes off on a revenge mission and all this stuff, and then they talk him into one last job, and then double cross and triple cross and quadruple cross, but they're all cyborgs, so it's cool as hell.
Yeah. There's like no less than like four reveals of somebody being a cyborg in this movie, right?
There's only so many times the side of somebody's head can open to reveal a gun barrel.
Right.
And it works every time somehow in this movie. You're like, okay, they did that once, and then they just keep doing it, and you're like, what?
Yes. And so, yeah, that's basically like the premise of the movie and like where it starts off with. And from there, it's just like this crazy mission where he's tracking down terrorists and then gets recruited by the LAPD and gets like a kind of spunky partner that joins him along.
Not Tank Girl TM.
Not Tank Girl. Someone completely different than Tank Girl.
Yes.
And yeah, it's just, you know, action scenes break out every 5 minutes. It's a pretty fun time. It's, I don't really have too much to say about Nemesis, honestly. It's a good time. I think
what do you need, a roadmap?
The action sequences are often very fun. I think there's some really cool inventive action. This actually went around on Twitter the week that we watched Nemesis. I think you retweeted it.
Yeah.
The week that we watched Nemesis, and it was like, behold, the coolest 30 seconds ever put to film. And it's a scene that takes place in a hotel room where Alex is like shooting the floor, like the floor to like go through the floor.
It's the thing from Underworld. It has to be from this, right? It's the same exact thing.
You are right. You are right, Mike. But he goes through like 15 floors.
That's the difference. Yeah.
That's the thing. So he's like mid jump, mid fall. He's shooting the floor underneath him and then landing through that hole and then shooting the floor underneath him there and just keeps going down through the hotel.
Yeah. And like the decision to like put a camera like underneath his chin, like looking straight up at him as he's just falling through floors.
Yes.
Is, I think, the like Albert Pyun direction, like elevation for these kinds of movies. Cause normally it would just be the wide shot of him going through the floors and it'd still be cool as hell like it is in Underworld.
Sure.
But to then just put a close up on his face as you just see debris and sparks and all this crazy shit as he's just falling through floor after floor after floor. Is just that like extra little weird gorilla movie making magic that's in there, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's so much of that kind of stuff in this movie. There's like really fun inventive camera work. There's stuff where you'll maybe follow the bullet as it's leaving the gun and that kind of thing. Some of it feels like very Sam Raimi-esque, you know? That
yeah,
kind of thing.
Definitely. That's a good point. I didn't think of that. Yeah. And yeah, there's just a little details like when Alex is like in prison or whatever after his like revenge at the beginning or the whatever after the first act, and like the LAPD comes to like recruit him, and the like director guy, I forget his name, is there and he's wearing glasses, and because it's just like the desert, you know, and it's like the helicopter dust everywhere, his glasses are just like caked in dust, and it's just such a weird little detail to like leave that there. He never cleans the lens, even though you know he wouldn't even be able to see out of them. But it's just like, huh, man, you know, just neat little like directorial or whatever touches to keep stuff weird. That would be, he'd have clean glasses in a Hollywood movie, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just something I noticed this time.
Yeah, fair enough. So I did want to ask you, Mike, were you aware that there's like a couple different endings to Nemesis?
I think I saw that on the Wikipedia page afterwards, but I don't really remember exactly what the different endings are other than like the voiceover is different or something.
Well, so how did your version end when you watched it this time?
It ends with Alex and Not Tank Girl TM.
Right.
And they're like on a bridge or a staircase and they're like, well, I guess we're going tomorrow, bruv, or whatever she said. I forget. She says something. And as they're like walking up to the top of the staircase, you hear the commissioner or whatever the hell his name. I think it is commissioner, right? Or
yes. Yeah. Commissioner Farnsworth.
Yes. Commissioner Farnsworth. You hear his voice and he's like, well, should we take them? And somebody says, why not? And then it just cuts to black.
Right? Yeah. Okay. So that's the version that I saw. Okay. And that is actually an alternate ending.
What?
Yeah. So the original cut of the movie or whatever, it just ends with them walking off and saying, piece by piece, Max. And then that's the end.
Oh, interesting.
So, and then there's a couple of different alternate endings. And so we had one that has that that scene. There's an extended version apparently released only in Japan and on the German limited edition Blu-ray.
Fascinating.
That has them talking about going to New York, and then Farnsworth actually shows up as they walk up the stairs. Like you actually see him on screen. Yeah, which is weird because he died in like the previous scene, right?
He falls into lava, for
yes,
sure.
Exactly. So he shows up and you have a female voice who says, "Should we take them out now?" And he says, "Why not?" And then the movie cuts to black, suggesting they kill Alex and Max, not Tank Girl TM.
Yes.
And so that's how our version ends, just without him actually appearing on screen. There's also a version that has a fight between, or that version does not have the fight between him and the endoskeleton, him and Farnsworth. So
he doesn't die in that version.
He doesn't die in that version. However, our version does have him die, and then it has that voiceover at the end.
Yeah.
Implying that he's still alive somehow, and we don't know how.
But there, I don't want, is there other alternate endings or no? That's
I guess that's it. I mean, it's that one, and then this one that has like basically him not showing up. The fight happens, and we have a voiceover version of what of that instead of him showing up.
Right. Interesting. Because I mean, they're talking about like being able to upload consciousnesses into other things and stuff.
That's
in
true.
The scenes before the endoskeleton fight. So like, I guess it's possible. I didn't even really question it that he wait. Like we just saw him fall into lava. But then I guess there's five more movies, so I guess they can't die. Or
well, there's
Alex
five
can't
there's
die.
Five more movies, but I don't think any of these characters pop up in any of these other movies.
Interesting.
It's like I said, the next one takes place 73 years after the original does.
True. But they're all robots; they could all still be there.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, there's Nemesis. Then Nemesis 2, Nebula is 73 years later. Then you've got Nemesis 3, Prey Harder, which was in 96. Also in 96, Nemesis 4, Death Angel. And then there was a fifth Nemesis movie, which I'm looking for now because Albert Pyun didn't direct that one. I have to do some research.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think really the determining factor in whether or not those movies are worth watching, but I guess now that I'm thinking about it, that factor will be zero in all the other movies because his character dies in this. But like, how much naked Thomas Jane ass is there in all those other movies? Because there's a lot in this.
He bears ass a lot in this movie. Yeah, there's a whole extended sequence in the hotel room with just him and the girl he's sleeping with.
Yeah, just being naked and smoking cigarettes at the window.
Yes.
All right, cool.
Okay, Nemesis 5 is called Nemesis 5, The New Model, which actually has Sue Price reprising her role, I believe, from Nemesis 2, I want to say. Yeah, she's in Nemesis 2 and 3 and 4. So, like, they have similar characters in those other movies, just not in this one, in the original,
yeah,
which is
reasonable.
Weird. There was also a crossover with Cyborg called Cyborg Nemesis, The Dark Rift.
Whoa.
Yes. Or I guess it was announced. It has never actually happened yet. So
that'd be cool.
That would be fun. I mean, I would want to see Albert Pyun make that because he directed both Cyborg and Nemesis.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Albert Pyun has passed away, which has been really interesting to watch the reaction to that online, because obviously that's not a name that a lot of people know. But it's a name that I think a few people who've been really affected by his movies are like really upset by. And specifically, I've been seeing Aaron Stewart on, who co-wrote Mandy with Nicolas Cage. He's been paying tribute to Albert Pyun a lot on social media. I think it's been known that he had an illness for a few months now and, you know, that kind of thing. So when he finally passed away, there was just like an outpouring of love on his side and then from a few other people on Twitter that I've been seeing for Albert Pyun. And it made me want to watch some of these movies. So I'm glad that you made me watch Nemesis to begin my Albert Pyun journey, Mike.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if it seems like, did he make a lot of canon films? Like, was that the company he worked with a lot? Do you have to, are on Wikipedia or do you see any of that in
I'm
there?
On,
but anyway.
I'm on Wikipedia. I'm not sure if that's the case.
But it seems like that style of movie,
yeah,
that production company that like people have a lot of nostalgia for that grew up with that. Like I know Elric Kane and a couple other guys that are on a lot of the podcasts we all listen to talk very fondly of that production company.
Sure. It does look like there's a lot of canon stuff in there.
Yeah. So I think maybe the people that grew up in that era of watching those movies from the video store and just kind of renting these insane direct-to-video action movies that like they all these names mean a lot to them. So it's nice to see the like outpouring in support of that. As we're sort of just discovering this kind of movie for us, it's fun to be like, oh shit, here we go. Here, get a little bit of guidance on like an entry point of where to check it out. So, I mean, especially if they're on Peacock, that's pretty crazy.
I'm not sure about any of the sequels, but the original Nemesis is on Peacock.
Yeah. Well, I just meant other like Albert Pyun movies.
Oh,
I don't
sure.
Know,
yeah.
I don't know where they're available. But yeah, check out Nemesis to the folks at home. And I guess I, you know, when I was watching it this time, I think really the my like Matrix direct influence connection is mostly the like trench coat and sunglasses look, which we did point out in the episode of Wonder 7 on The Complete Works.
Sure.
Where that seems to be very influential on that era. But I think, yeah, just like about like the war between machines and humans and that whole like super cop kind of thing. Well, not super cop. That's, you know what I mean?
Sure. RoboCop.
RoboCop. Yeah, exactly. Terminator, you know, all that stuff.
Yep.
It's all in the mix here with that kind of Hong Kong style action. So yeah. And there's one scene in particular, actually at the very beginning, one like move where Alex is being chased through that like blown up warehouse or whatever the hell, that like factory or whatever, that's big shootout at the beginning. And he like dives backwards down a hill and takes out two guns. And it's really like a hard boiled or whatever kind of move, like a John Woo move. But that always reminds me, or that reminded me of at the beginning of The Matrix when Trinity is being chased by the agents and she dives through the window across the building and like falls down the staircase and pulls out the two guns and is like waiting and they don't come. That move, I think I saw that in the beginning of Nemesis. And I was like, that's got to be where it's from. Like, you know, because it also, and then the rest of the movie happens. You're like, this had to be an influence on the Wachowskis. So yeah, watch it for that too.
Yeah, there you go. Also, I have to mention this because I just saw this in the cast list here. But so the character he meets, you know, not Tank Girl TM, her name is Max. Mm-hmm. Do you know the character's full name, Mike?
Max Strix. No.
No. First name Max, last name Impact.
Yeah.
Max Impact.
How do they not hammer that home harder in the movie? How do they not know her name is Max Impact?
That might just be in the credits or something. That's the movie should be called Max Impact.
Yeah. Nemesis v Max Impact. Yes. Or with Max Impact. But yeah, her like introduction when they like finally are together. And she like zaps him with her necklace, and it's just like a tiki face that shoots lightning bolts out of its eyes.
Yeah.
I was like, cinema. This is amazing.
There it is. there we go. We represented both sides of the cinematic spectrum today, I think, with Nemesis and Princess Mononoke.
Correct. Yeah. And it was also very funny watching this with a friend of mine who is was a geologist in Hawaii. Wherever they're supposed to be, it's just the big island on Hawaii. Because he's like, oh, that's that. Holy shit, that's that. Oh, they're on this volcano. They're in this national park. Like every scene, he was very excited to just be like, I know where all this is.
Nice. That's awesome.
So yeah, that's fun. Good for them. They got to take a vacation to Hawaii and make this movie.
And they made four more. So there's that. I want to check out more Albert Pyun movies. This made me want to see more of them because I wasn't like crazy about Nemesis, but I did enjoy it. And I was just really taken with like how wild the action was in this. If we can have like a movie that has a more coherent story and great action scenes, I'm all about it.
You're all in. Yeah, now I'm looking at this movie. For Knights, not like K-N-I-G-T-S.
Sure.
I don't think Sweetheart is in it, now that I'm like taking a look at it.
Okay, there was definitely a movie that Sweetheart was in that was like kind of thrown around on Twitter and stuff.
But yeah.
Or maybe it was Stunts by Sweetheart or whatever. I
maybe, yeah. But yeah, Chris Christopherson, Lance Henriksen, Chad Stahelski Stunts.
All right.
Maybe he produced it, but... Yeah, I guess put that on the list for next time.
Cool. All right, let's do it. And that, I think, is going to bring us to the end of this week's episode, Mike.
Yes, actually, it's a direct sequel to Cyborg, which is insane.
Knights is a sequel to Cyborg?
Apparently, yeah.
What?
That's fun. According to Wikipedia.
That's wild. There's also a movie called Cyborg 2.
It's direct to video, baby. They don't think you follow it. You can't follow along. They're here to trick you.
Yes, yeah, very much. All right. So that is going to be the end of this week's episode of Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter and Letterboxd. And if you'd like to donate to support the show, you can do that at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/MikeAndMikePods, plural, because we have two podcasts. And of course, don't forget, we have merch now.
Yes, we do.
You want t-shirts? You want mugs? A clock? What do you want? We got it. You can get that at mikeandmikepods.redbubble.com.
There it is. And you can find me online at msmithfilmbug on Twitter, Mike Smith Film on Letterboxd, and Radio Mike Sandwich Instagram. Thanks so much for listening to Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DeCrescio. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And if you want to contact us, you can tweet at us at Mike and Mike Pod. You can find the rest of our podcasts on Rapture Press alongside many other podcasts about all kinds of comic books and movie news and all that good stuff. Next week, I don't know. What are we doing, Mike?
Sounds like we're watching Knights.
I think next week, I guess maybe some discussions or something.
I guess some discussions. Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Season 3.5 of The Complete Works, Albert Pune.
There you go.
Right now.
Yes. Yeah, probably some discussions next week, unless we can think of something better. In the meantime, we are going through every one of Michelle Yeoh's movies for The Complete Works. And this week, we released our episode on Wonder 7, which Mike really loved. He was a big fan of Wonder 7.
Yeah, big fan. Loved it. Excellent.
So there you go. Check that out. And that is the end of this week's episode of Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. We'll see you on the other side. And if you ever want to contact us and respond to something we did in the show, you can email us over at, you should tweet at us. Tweet at us at Mike and Mike Pod.
That can't still be in the copy, is it, Mike?
Oh, it's still in the copy, Mike.
Wow.
It is. I have basically never changed the copy and like just go by like memory of like what I'm supposed to say. Like yeah. It's there as a backup. And then when I forget what I'm supposed to say, I look at it and it's wrong.
Yeah, good. Just to keep you on your toes. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.